I believe at this time we're able to hear item I, the Judicial Branch Technology Planning Task Force update. This is an action item. We invite Judge Herman again, as well as Judge D'Alba, and Mr. Robert Oyung.
Actually, it'll be Justice.
Oh, very good. Thank you, Justice Ashman Gerst. I apologize. My agenda is not updated yet.
Our IT guru, Rob Oyung, is helping us out here. So thank you, Rob. Our presenters are myself and Mr. Rob Oyung, who's the CIO from Santa Clara County. His talents have been donated by Santa Clara to us. He's the overall project manager of the Technology Planning Task Force's efforts. And what's before the Judicial Council today for action is a recommendation from the JCTC to adopt conceptually the executive summaries, the governance structure, the strategic plan, the tactical plan, and the funding segment or track of the Technology Planning Task Force. The reason we're asking for the Council's approval conceptually rather than in final is because, of course, we're coming before the Council in June for final approval, and in the meantime, we need to send our product out for review broadly outside of the branch. We circulated inside the branch, but outside for public comment, and because at this point, this is going to be a platform for supporting the BCP that we just talked about in the previous item. So, as pointed out by Zlatko this morning, the governor in his budget has actually addressed the future of funding technology programs for the judicial branch. I'm going to quote it because it is language that we're going to rely on go forward. One of the key issues for the judicial branch will be how it uses technology to increase efficiency. The state trial court improvement and modernization fund was established to fund statewide improvement and efficiency projects. And as the judicial branch begins to develop and identify a long-term statewide technology plan, which, of course, this is that process, the administration will work collaboratively with the Judicial Council to develop a sustainable and comprehensive funding plan that furthers the goals of the Act and benefits the trial courts and the users of those courts. So this is an important message, I think, from the governor in terms of the willingness at this point for the administration to support our efforts as far as technology is concerned. So just by way of background, the chief authorized, in February 2013, authorized us to address the judicial branch technology governance and strategy, and directed that the task force would work, and this is a key element in collaboration with the courts to propose a strategic plan, a tactical plan, a governance structure, and a funding model, and identify and promote opportunities for court collaboration and consortia. Also, the work to date that provides the basis for the BCP that has been previously presented on digital courts, with phase one being the CMS's, six CMS projects, as well as land. So, milestones to date, as previously reported to the Council, prior to November, we circulated our draft proposals regarding planning, governance, and funding amongst representatives of both of our sister branches, the legislature and the executive, with positive feedback in terms of the direction that they were proceeding. So they have been kept in the loop in terms of what our progress has been. Back in November, we did 3 regional meetings. So we presented our planning, governance, and funding process to CEOs, CIOs, and to PJs from throughout the state. We provided a short process update in December to the council, and we're presenting the updated fuller presentation today. Our proposals will go out for, our proposed planning will go out for public comment, and then we will again return to the council with public comments in the completed project for our June meeting.
Just to remind everybody, in October of 2012, you've heard this before, but just as a little refresher, in October of 2012, we had the Technology Summit, which had participants from the courts, the IT specialists, the State Technology Agency, and it was made clear that without a good strategic plan, the branch just wasn't going to get any additional funds for technology. And this task force approach has worked in the past by establishing these tracks that you'll hear more details about. And the focus of all of this is on outreach to the courts and our users and involvement and buy-in by the trial courts.
And I just add to that that, you know, our outreach to the other 2 branches on where we were going with the technology plan, key among those was the California Department of Technology and the executive branch, which, of course, has a connection with the Department of Finance on these issues. And I think we've learned some fruit in terms of the governor's recognition of our technology needs in his budget for the next fiscal. So overall, the big view is the proposed technology vision through collaboration, initiative, and innovation on a branch-wide and local level. The branch adopts and uses technology, and this is key to improve access to justice and to provide a broader range and higher quality of services to courts, litigants, lawyers, justice partners, et cetera. And I think in terms of the future of funding and getting funding approval through the legislature and through the executive, that the key piece of improving access, that is those projects that are key in giving the citizens of the state and litigants, stakeholders, et cetera, greater access to the courts are going to be attractive for funding purposes. One example that's already in play that we haven't sought funding for is remote trials, for example. I know in talking to a number of legislators, they were concerned about courthouse closures and the fact that people had to travel 70 to 80 miles in order to get their matters heard. And while it might not have everything going for it that an in-person hearing does, the level of technology that we're achieving today in terms of teleconferencing is at a very high level. And those of us that come out of private practice had no trouble in using video teleconferencing and depositions and even court appearances because it can enhance accessibility.
You know, almost every person I met with yesterday was really interested in the Fresno project, the remote video trials. We really thought that was an outstanding program and hope to see it expanded.
All right, so back in 2012, the council approved 10 guiding principles for technology that were forwarded through JCTC to the council from CTAC. Number one, I'm going to go through this entire list because the number one really kind of capsulizes that is that we use technology to ensure access and fairness rather than being a barrier to access and fairness. And over a number of years, we've worked closely with the self-represented litigant community as well as legal services community to assure them that we are taking into account the fact that technology should not be a bar to access, but should enhance it. All of the others, 2 through 9, sort of fall underneath that access category. And number 10, of course, is quote-unquote plan ahead, which is what we're doing now as we speak. So out of the technology planning task force, we're proposing 4 additional principles. And number 11 would be improve branch-wide compatibility through technology standards, and just to develop that a little bit, that's providing a branch-wide technology standards or guidelines related to access to information or submission of documents that support the branch's goal of greater compatibility with the public and California justice partners. And then consider branch-wide collaboration and economies of scale. Let's identify opportunities to collaborate on technologies to reduce cost, leverage expertise and training, and improve consistency. And one of those projects that dovetails with a number of comments that we're going to make this morning is that we do have, as we speak, first of all, a master services agreement that was developed out of an RFP to identify three vendors for case management systems. Out of that project, we have seven courts in Northern California that have come together to collaborate on a master services agreement with Tyler Technologies so that they can share configuration. They're also going through our cloud technology so that they're essentially renting the services rather than pay for hardware and software outright. So this is we're already bearing fruit in terms of delivering a consortium of projects. Foster local decision making. Develop, fund, and implement technologies to improve local business processes that may provide, and this is key, that may provide a model for wider implementation. In other words, this sort of dovetails with some of the work that Judge Walsh's committee is doing. That is, we really need a clearinghouse for all ideas for efficiencies within the courts, but also specifically as to technology. So the courts developing a project, and this goes to the next point as well. If the court is developing a technology and it's a good idea, it should be open source and it should be shared with other courts.
Yeah, the additional four principles were developed by the governance track and then were shared with everybody else on the task force. Lots of debate, lots of discussion, and what we were really trying to accomplish and feel we did was that collaboration works both ways. If something is developed locally, it can be a guide for other courts, and if something is developed by the branch itself, it might be a guide for the local courts.
All right. One of the big issues as we sat around and brainstormed, all 40 plus of us, about going forward, was the need to work more as an IT community rather than working in silos at the individual courts level or at the AOC level. So out of that, we developed first of all, a couple of things were apparent. Based on the experience with the working group that was put together in July of 2012, they developed, among other projects, the RFP and the Master Services Agreement for CMS vendors. The work stream approach tends to be very efficient. That is, if you have a particular project, you put it together in a work stream. AOC support, ITSO support, council, CTEC involvement perhaps, but also leveraging the expertise of local subject matter experts in the local courts and the local courts of review. So with this work stream approach, it's kind of like saying, look, this is a project, here's what the project's going to cost, here's what it's going to take in staff time, and here's what our sunset or timeline is for completing this project, rather than having a project just sort of float. So that's an efficient approach that we think works, that should be business-driven with participation, as I said, both from the courts and the AOC. We've got an incredible amount of knowledge at the ITSO level, at the AOC level, but we also have an incredible amount of subject matter expertise, both technologically through our CIOs and administrators through our CEOs, that we can leverage and make use of by working together as an IT community. And it's also important, as we've done with the legislature and the executive, to solicit for the participation of key stakeholders in our process so that, again, we can enhance transparency, there are no surprises as far as the other branches and other stakeholders are concerned about where we're going moving forward. All right. Proposed governance roles and responsibilities, and this focuses primarily on JCTC and on a repositioning or refocusing CTAC, renaming or rebranding as the Information Technology Advisory Committee. The real consensus of the Planning Task Force was that there really is a need for a high-level judicial council-level committee to act in the role of developing policy, providing guidance and oversight as far as branch technology is concerned. It's a recognition. There is a recognition also and a consensus that there is also a need for an operational level committee to focus on the nuts and bolts, or the virtual nuts and bolts, if you will, as far as technology is concerned. Part of this is because of the turnover at the Judicial Council level, the members of the council, there's as well as subject matter expertise. If you have an operational committee, it can develop, gather in a substantial amount of subject matter expertise administratively and technologically, and also some of its membership can have a longer-term role so that you've got the continuity in terms of process. So, again, JCTC is high level. JCTC not only interfaces with Court Technology Advisory Committee, or soon to be ITAC, but also interfaces with other advisory committees that have valuable input on technological issues such as PJ Advisory, the SEAC, Appellate Advisory, and proper Budget Advisory Committee. At the ITAC level, its focus and function is going to be similar to what it is now in terms of its overall scope of its work, meaning that it's focused on technology projects, what technology projects should we engage in going forward, as well as rulemaking and potential legislation as it relates to technology. So this chart is a comparison of CTAC now versus ITAC in the future, and it's not detailed. So it sort of looks like, well, you know, where are the changes? Where are we going with this? And you can see the technology projects, ruling, legislative proposals are still part of their responsibilities. I think the main focus in repositioning CTAC so that it works collaboratively with the trial courts is rather than simply internally developing projects that seem to the membership to be a good idea, it's really focusing on the idea that we are an IT community and that in any given technological situation, it's important to reel in and leverage the resources that we have outside of the branch, and that's the increasing technology subject matter expertise. And that really, again, in terms of project sources are not just coming within the committee, but a project source or an initiative source for any technology project can come from a variety of directions. It can come from a good idea at the trial court level, which might be distributed more broadly, like the President Pilot Project. It could come from the council down. It could come legislatively. It could come from a number of different sources. And then the important thing within the committee is to determine, one, is there really a need or a desire among our stakeholders and courts for this particular project? What is its priority in terms of its return on investment? And what's the business case for it in terms of providing more services and better access to our public and stakeholders? So in pursuing this readjustment or refocusing of the IT Advisory Committee, a group of us are working with, both from the current CTAC group as well as from JCTC, Judge D'Albert, Justice Ashman Burst, and myself are going to be working on the JCTC side. And on the CTAC side, it will be the chair and vice chair, along with Jake Chatters, who was the project manager for the governance track of the Planning Task Force, Brian Cota, who is the project manager for the strategic and tactical planning track, and Justice Slough, who is the project manager for the funding track of the task force. So we will work together to refine exactly how ITAC is going to be repositioned to be a more effective force in terms of promoting technology for the branch. And again, that's in anticipation. We're doing that effort between now and June in anticipation that our deliverable will be presented to the council in June, and ITAC, CTAC/ITAC at that point will be ready to take a new direction, and the refinements have already taken place.
This is an area that I've been involved in for a couple of years. There's been a feeling, perhaps, that CTAC was a bit cumbersome, was a bit slow in getting things done. In addition to a more varied membership on ITAP, we're hoping to more mirror the task force approach. And the other thing that I was concerned about was that it was really giving the appellate projects equal dignity with the other kinds of projects. And so, although it's not reflected on that particular slide, there will be an appellate subcommittee working specifically within ITAC. It's been said by some of the experts that, you know, the appellate courts move forward and develop, for example, e-filing, the trial courts will necessarily be following along. So I really wanted to make sure that the appellate courts were receiving the focus that they should.
I'd like to congratulate you on that. Justice Ashman Gerst has been saying, every time we have a teleconference, she says, well, wait a minute, what about the courts of review? So, Chief, courts of review are well represented here. And actually what we've developed is under the kind of readjustment of our advisory committees that we've been working on is a joint appellate advisory committee subcommittee with a joint ITAC subcommittee that will work together to make sure that the courts of review are well served and in addition can work as pilots on various projects for the trial courts. All right. In looking at how we sort of take this onion and determine responsibilities in terms of governance, funding, and planning. We looked at branch-wide programs and solutions. Those are to be defined, managed at the branch level, more or less mandatory participation. And the examples of that are pre-existing are Phoenix Financial is one of them. All the courts participate in that. There are some projects that are sort of branch wide, like land, but it's not completely branch wide at this point. Or the domestic violence restraining order registry, which a number of courts are participating in, but it's really supported at the branch level. And then, you know, it's clear that all of the IT professionals that are involved in our effort, as well as within ITSA, that there really are commonly accepted standards with technical and administrative relative to technology. They were recognized within the field and pretty much accepted by everyone. And the consensus was that really, if we're using branch money for a project, then standards should pretty much be mandatory. And other standards should be advisory or guidelines depending on what the particular project is. And a good example of a kind of pretty much solid accepted standard for case management systems, 2JEFS, is now being used by a number of courts. And I'm not going to go through what that acronym means, but also there's a national standard, and that's pretty much the standard in looking into the future with the grandfather clause that we should look at in terms of if you're going to have a case management system, then that case management system probably should be a new standard system so that it functions appropriately. We've had experience with some courts that have gone in another direction and there have been difficulties. Consortium programs and solutions, I've already talked about the 7 courts that have formed a consortium to essentially work together rather than having to configure their own systems in order to save funding. And then local extensions like the ELF extension down in Orange County, locally managed and developed based on branch-wide solutions. But, of course, you can't do anything to a branch-wide program that's going to affect other courts. Finally, local programs, which are locally managed and developed, upgrading your telecommunication system, stuff that's specifically local in nature. All right, Rob William.
Great. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the proposed goals as part of the strategic plan. Establishing these goals really sets a target for the branch in terms of its achievement for technology, and it then supports our progress towards the vision that Judge Herman discussed early on as well. So the four goals that are being proposed, the first one is focused really on this concept of the digital court. And the idea of the digital court really is to use technology to improve access to justice and efficiencies through the use of this technology. And that's really the focal point of the strategic plan and these goals. Establishing these goals also allows a way for us to add measures towards the progress of our vision and the goals. The second overall goal is to optimize the branch resources. This includes focus on collaboration, professional development, and leveraging procurement. The third goal is around optimizing our infrastructure. This is to support the digital court, which includes the network as well as our ability to recover from technical disasters. And then finally, the fourth overall goal is to promote rule and legislative changes. This is really to support the use of technology. We have existing initiatives that potentially are hindered through unclear or limiting rules that exist, and we've gone through a process of revising those rules over time. So, for example, rules around e-filing, the use of video technologies, those rules have been updated to help facilitate that use throughout the branch, and we've been seeing the benefit of that in the short term. In terms of a tactical plan, the tactical plan actually provides the individual initiatives and projects that will be initiated to support each of the four goals. So we have overall four goals, and then underneath those four goals, we'll have individual initiatives. I'm not going to go through all of the initiatives, but I did want to highlight the ones that are here to support the main goal of the digital court. So you can see some projects around case management, support of video use, the jury management, e-filing, and as well the protective order registry that Judge Herman has talked about.
And these were identified with input, obviously, from the trial court in terms of taking the trial court and the court of review what the courts see as priorities. So.
And some of these initiatives have already been launched, and so we do have activities already in e-filing. We've got a master services agreement for document management and case management. So these initiatives really formalize some of those activities to help us move faster and quicker towards our goals. The last item I want to highlight here in the digital court is this developing the standard CMS interfaces and data exchanges. And so that's one idea that the task force felt very strongly about as well in terms of the interoperability. So even though we are not proposing a strategy for a single case management system, we do wish to ensure that whatever case management systems are selected and used within the branch can be interoperable and that data can be exchanged between them and shared, not only within the branch, but with our justice partners as well.
This is not a dictated process. This is, I think, certainly at the CEO and CIO level, they agree that in order for us to move forward technologically, we do have to have accepted standards in our key field.
The next set of tactical initiatives support the other three goals that have been identified in terms of optimizing branch resources. We're looking at establishing master branch purchasing agreements and licensing agreements to make sure that our procurements are as effective as possible for technology, hardware, and software. In optimizing our infrastructure, a big focus there is to extend the LAN-WAN initiatives, that's the local area networks within the courts, as well as the wide area network connecting the courts and the internet, extending that program to the remaining courts. And there was a short discussion about that as it relates to the PCT as well. So that's identified in the tactical plan as a very important initiative in supporting this overall goal of optimizing our infrastructure. And then finally, we have some tactical initiatives for promoting rules and legislative changes. We're looking to identify the most important ones. In particular, electronic signatures have been identified as one area of focus already.
What's the difference between an electronic signature and a digital signature?
Anybody? Anybody? So a so an electronic signature is basically a electronic representation of a signature. A digital signature actually is one that is certified and verified through various technologies so that you can confirm that the signature actually did originate from the person who signed it.
Which is standard practice now in the business world, and it's more secure than a signature. Okay.
So then we also took a look at these four technology goals, and we wanted to make sure that they mapped and they supported the overall goals of the branch. So on the top, you see the four technology goals that have been identified, and along the side, you see the six branch goals for the judicial branch. And so as you can see, the four technology goals actually all support the number one goal of the branch, which is to ensure access, fairness, and diversity. And you can also notice that they support all of the goals in one way or another as well. We also took a look at our technology goals and compared them with the strategic plan for the California Department of Technology. So not only does the strategic plan for technology for the judicial branch support the judicial branch's overall goals, it actually supports the overall technology goals of the state as well. And so you can see that, again, the four goals that the task force is recommending also supports the number one goal of the state of providing a responsive, accessible, and mobile government. So now as we move to implement these initiatives, we recognize that there will be limited resources. So Judge Herman is going to provide now an overview of a proposed tool that the Technology Committee actually has just used and piloted to prioritize and allocate some resources, as he discussed, in relationship to the PCP.
Thank you, Ron. Before I move on, I did want to also mention my thanks to Judge Weicker for donating to Chatter's significant...
He wanted that.
Significant, yeah, let's talk. Significant resources to our efforts. So this is the matrix that I spoke about on the previous item. This was developed by a small group within the Technology Planning Task Force, and it was actually taken from a private industry approach. So it's a tool that has been tested in other circumstances and found to be valuable, and it has been altered in a couple of different ways to fit what we're doing in terms of prioritization. And I'm not going to belabor the model, except to note that the big categories you can see are: is it aligned with strategic goals? Is it aligned with what we're thinking of, both in the broader branch strategic goals as well as our technology and strategic goals? And is it aligned with priorities? What's its business impact? Is it a single court, or is it going to be something that's going to be applicable to courts throughout the state, perhaps branch-wide? What's the return on investment of this project? What's the likelihood of benefit realization? Business risk. What is the risk of this project? Is there an urgency for change operations-wise? Legal regulatory compliance, organizational readiness. Technology alignment and fit. So how does this fit with our branch-wide standards? Is it a new standard? Is it some other standard? What's its level of alignment with branch-wide vendors? This was somewhat a lot of discussion around this piece because currently the quote-unquote branch-wide vendors are the three vendors of case management systems that have been identified within the RFP process. And again, what's the overall technology risk? Can the infrastructure support it? Are there identified tech staff to support? And you know, what is the product that we're actually looking at? What's its maturity within the technological world? Is this a totally innovative, brand new, high risk? Let's take a throw at it at a small pilot program level, or is this something that within the industry is a mature technology?
As we certainly know, and clearly pointed out to many of us yesterday, Our current funding situation is either bleak or uncertain. Next year, we're likely to have a deficit in the Improvement and Modernization Fund, which is a source for funding of our branch-wide initiatives. The 1% cap on reserves will severely handicap the courts from investing in technology. As we also know, we have to rebuild our credibility with the Department of Finance, with the legislature, the executive branch, for managing technology projects so that we can build the case for restoring funding for technology within the judicial branch. So we looked at other states to see if we could get any information, any leverage from their different models, and you can see some of the states that we did look at. But unfortunately, most other state judiciaries fund their technology either through their general fund or through fees. So there weren't any real out-of-the-box ideas we could use. As Jim mentioned, though, we did review some industry models for categorizing funds so that we could examine and manage the funds in a more methodical manner. So taking a look at the proposed funding categories, similar to the way that we're categorizing initiatives so that we can manage them appropriately, we're proposing a model for managing different types of technology funds. There'll be different governance models, funding sources, and allocation models for branch-wide initiatives, operational expenses, and upgrades. We're also proposing an innovation and improvement fund where we would set aside a small amount of money for technology experimentation and innovation. So the categories in blue up there are managed at the branch levels. Those in orange are managed at the local court level. By the way, the courts of review have not been forgotten. They're funded separately. And the proposed innovation and improvement fund can be sourced and managed at either level. So let's walk through some of the categories. First of all, operations, what we call keep it running. So that's routine, ongoing IT costs that support court operations. By and large, these are year-to-year costs that are typically stable and predictable. Just to give you a few examples, it might include annual hardware and software maintenance, telecommunication services, email, the data center, court staff, and professional services. Then when we look to routine upgrades, such as upgrades for hardware that occur on a regular basis, it's based on expected life cycle of equipment. So examples might be replacement of desktop laptops every 3 years, replacement of servers every 3 years. The intermittent upgrades are episodic and unpredictable upgrades, and those could be triggered by the vendor. They might include software updates to address changes in the law, defects, enhancements. Some other specific examples might be upgrades to an operating system, upgrades to Microsoft Office, upgrade or replacement of a case management system, a document management system, or perhaps a jury management system. Then the next category of innovation and improvement may come from the branch, or it may come from the trial or the appellate courts. And what we're talking about here is branch funding for courts to innovate and to learn about new technologies or to jumpstart advanced technological opportunities. Past innovations, to put this in a little bit of context, might be the remote video appearance, e-filing, e-citations, and improving access for self-represented litigants. Past improvement examples were the move toward a digital court by imaging active cases and converting microfilm and data conversion. Getting now to new branch-wide initiatives, these are costs related that provide or expand a branch-wide service. And some branch-wide services are mandated, while some are going to be optional. So this will include funding either for one-time costs of hardware, software, and deployment, and funding required for increases in maintenance costs, such as Phoenix Financial, Phoenix HR, CCPOR, GIPSIS, CHP citations, and remote video appearances. So ongoing branch-wide standards and protocols, those are state-level funds for developing and maintaining standards and protocols. And examples, again, are the state-level data exchanges, data integration with justice partners, such as CHPE citations, Department of Social Services, child support data, master service agreements for IT equipment, software, or data centers.
All this chart I asked of the previous one is really the government structure in the right-hand column. And to the extent that this is a routine maintenance upgrade, et cetera, it's a local court issue. Out of the local court's allocation by the allocation of formula methodology, and it's suspended by the local trial courts according to their priorities and needs. The kind of innovation and improvement idea, again, would be reviewed at the council level, but the idea here is to seek some funding, not a particularly large amount, to encourage local trial courts to come up with a pilot innovation that may then be rolled out to other courts. And this would be, again, as suggested, overseen by JCPC and at the council level, and the expenditures would be either at the AOC level or at the trial court level. And, you know, one good example that has not been is the Fresno project with remote video. That's the kind of project that's innovative, and it's something that can be expanded, obviously, to other case types beyond traffic, and can also potentially be expanded to other courts for their use. And then ongoing branch-wide standards and protocols. Again, this falls to the Judicial Council and to the JCPC for oversight, and with input, of course, from the advisory committees, CAC, PJ's, appellate advisory, chocolate budget advisory.
So, as you can see, we talked about what are our next steps. Task Force has been moving along at a really good clip. This has been done in a very short period of time. We're here at this meeting to get approval from the council to the initial draft recommendations. Then this would be distributed. We would then distribute detailed recommendations for internal grant review and comments in February. March would be the time to send the proposal out for public comment. And either April, but more likely June, after the comments are received and incorporated in the report, we would then be asking for Judicial Council approval. So once we implement the proposed governance model, the strategic plan, and the funding model, we hope to present to you a clear shared direction for our technology initiatives, a transparent model for managing and allocating technology funds, increased credibility, more consistent services across the courts, and better accountability for the use of resources and public funds. We think we can realize these outcomes by working collaboratively as an IT community. Now, I have to apologize for the length of this report, but I'm not really sure, other than the basic budget, what's more important right now than coming up with a technology plan for the courts. I have to give so much gratitude and thanks, first of all, of course, to Jim Herman for heading both the Technology Committee and the Task Force, to Rob, Brian, and Jake for the work they've done, to Virginia, Mark, and Jessica. This has been a huge effort, as you can see, by this report, and I just want to thank everyone for their time.
Thank you. Hearing the presentation, reading this report, this is, in my view, outstanding work that reflects so much about the best of the branch. It's deliberate. It has expertise. It's thoughtful. It's future-looking. It has a standard and a structure and a methodology of how we will think in the future about projects. It brings together all of us in a use of our resources and a sharing of ideas. I don't mean to prejudge how the Judicial Council should vote on this, but I am saying I can't help myself. I was just here with Justice Baxter and Judge Jarre asking if there's a way we could copyright, keep this, and sell it, because it is the roadmap to how to think about implementing a high-level government IT project. I've not seen anything like this. I commend all of you for what I know was hard work, and frankly, in the beginning, admittedly, it was reported back to me in a language I did not understand. But you've brought me along, and I feel at a very basic level I understand it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chief. And again, thank you to all of the 40-plus folks from the courts that worked on this project. So,
particularly Rob Bell here.
Yes, Justice Lewis.
I don't have a question, but I want to commend you also and your committee and all of you for the work that you've done in this regard. And I think it fits in, again, with the example of what the council has been doing over the last 3 years in sort of governance role. And this is one of those key areas of technology. You tackled it, took it on, and you've come up again with a great, great plan, a great model for it. So, I may not understand all the tech stuff, as you've told me many times, but I understand the governance aspect and the plan and the presentation and the report, and I know the late nights and Saturdays that you have all talked and we have all talked, and again, the other two committees, and it's just heartwarming because, again, it fits in with the governance structure and the oversight that we're providing you and a wonderful job. And including the trial courts in the book.
Thank you. We do have glossaries of names.
Thank you. Judge Walsh, David Yamasaki, then Jim Potter.
Well, thank you, Chief. Great job. This is terrific, and I agree with the Chief. It certainly is a great statement about what our branch can do and how quickly we can do it. My concern is that because of the strictures we have in terms of seeking comment, suddenly this rapidly and successfully deployed plan is going to get bogged down. And as we heard yesterday in many of our legislative visits, and as we have heard before, you know, you're not going to get any more money until we see a plan. Well, now we got a plan, but we can't quite show it to them because it's out for comment. And I'm looking at my calendar. The budget gets passed June 15th. This will be approved June 25th. Are we going to get hammered in Sacramento in the meantime saying, well, you didn't come up with a plan, and don't tell us it's pending, it's out there. Can we somehow accelerate the comment period so we could at least have this in place as we're getting down to the final budget debates in, say, early June?
Well, the question would be, could we have it by April
council? Why is no one looking back at Judge Moore?
it's like freeze tag. Everyone is frozen in the back.
I would say that we're at the point with this product where we can pretty immediately share it with the key people in both the legislature and the executive that are with the staff decision making level, and then I think we can also be prepared to share it with the key legislators.
That was my impression. So it seems the real delay is the comment period. Is that somehow is that required by law or rule, and can it be modified so it can be expedited? I don't mean your work.
Right.
You don't your work.
Right. We'd originally targeted April, and then for a number of different reasons, we thought that June is the target date.
Mark, was the Secretariat able to talk about what the council's precedent is, or could it be 60 days, or maybe that's what the recommendation was. I think it's probably sound in that it would be a good advice that we got from the folks in Sacramento. Was that this needs to be a collaborative process. And we have included a lot of people, but we have not included a lot of our public members, and members of members of the self-help group. And their input, I think, is important. And we think we're looking for the way we But I think Judge Furman's point, the whole idea of bringing it to you in this format, which has a lot of the substance that would support budget requests, is to get the careful approval so that we do have something to go through the budget process in this particular case.
In other words, this would have council conceptual approval. So we could go forward in that fashion as a document to be shared. And I kind of tend to agree with mark. I think that because we have promoted this as something that would be transparent and would allow opportunity and time for feedback from our sister branches specifically, as well as from stakeholders in general, it's a good idea to get people coming here. If we did 30 degrees, would that get us to the report? It would be tight, he said, sort of under his breath.
Sounds like my request for order shortening time is being opposed.
Well, it started out ex parte, but
yeah. You know, we all heard yesterday how important transparency was, and how there was this perception, even though we might disagree with it, that we had not been transparent in the past. We certainly want the opportunity for public comment. So I don't know if there's any way that we can shorten that. Thank you.
So at this time, it sounds denied. And let me hear. Jody, did you want to say something?
The only thing I was going to add, Chief, is that I know all of the meetings that we have with the Department of Finance, with the Legislative Analyst Office, and even with Leg staff, they've been fully informed, and we keep them updated with regard to the progress of the work of the Common Committee and the task force. So I don't think there is anybody in the other two branches who are not aware of the timeline and the progress that we have made. And we've also informed them about the presentation today and what the council requested from the task force as well. So I'm not sure that it should negatively impact the budget discussion on June, because Judge Herman's been great in terms of continuing to get informed, as well as AOP and all of our members.
Is there any way it could be presented as a draft that will be sent out for public comment, so it can?
Well, it is going out for public comment.
Right, they'll get it too.
As a draft to whoever needs it, from one from the legislature or from Department of Finance.
Yeah, they're going to get it too.
Can you do
it?
Absolutely.
They're
going to
get it. They'll be receiving it as part of the circulation.
Circulated to key legislators.
We would do that as part of the public comment.
Exactly.
So David Yamasaki, Jim Fox, Justice Hull, and Justice Baxter.
I certainly support the comments expressed by the chair of the presiding public advisory committee. I'm going to try to sprinkle a little bit of sunshine on the importance of this proposed document. You know, this really is an amazing recovery from where we were back in March of 2012. And the work that has been done has covered a lot of ground, that I think is going to benefit the branch for years to come. And it was done in a very, very short period of time. As was said before, it's been extremely collaborative, transparent to all of the trial courts and participants in the development of this document. And I really can see how the technology and standards that are being identified will do something that we've struggled with for a number of years, and that's connecting the courts. So much of what we do requires somebody to take a piece of paper or send something from point A to point B. This will alleviate that inefficiency. It also establishes a lot of opportunities to maximize resources that are so preciously coveted, and also with this approach we'll be able to leverage a lot of the technology or advances that one court or another court develops, so that the information is shared and we'll be able to gain from those advances much easier than perhaps we had before. So I look forward to the opportunity to hearing this for final approval. I think it's a great document for many of us to be here.
Thank you, David. Jim Fox, Justice Hull, Justice Baxter.
I would like to move a content approval of the draft, and I would also like to suggest the possibility, if in fact there's further discussion, with the Department of Finance or with the legislature that there may be some issues relative to a June final approval that we could give consideration to a meeting of the May, subsequent to the May revise, and yet prior to the final budget adoption, if that becomes
Thank you. That's a good idea. We'll keep track and keep tabs.
Second
by Justice Jacobson. Justice Holt and Justice Baxter.
I think my comments are probably going to just echo what the room is thinking on the question of moving out for a shortened comment period. I think this is an issue we all can agree is a very high-profile issue, and I think it's one that needs to have full vetting. Both within and outside the branch. And it does seem to me, though, that if it is of some advantage, and I'm sure it will be, to have a plan almost in place by the time the budget is passed, that by the end of May, earlier than that, we're going to have the comment period closed. We're going to have all the comments we're going to get. We're going to be able to digest those comments and make any suggested alterations to the plan that those comments would give rise to. And so without predicting what the final council vote would be in June, I suspect we're going to have very nearly, if not actually a completed project, that the extent that we can use it to help our efforts to get funding for technology, that we could honestly represent that we're there all but for the charity. So I think the comment period should remain in place.
Thank you. Justice Baxter, then Judge Rosenberg.
This may have been addressed earlier. I caught part of the comment, but as a matter of course, will the invitation to finance go to all of the legislative forums? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is that a given?
Yes.
Okay. That's what's good.
Thank you. And before I hear from Judge Rosenberg, we have on many occasions in the past, as a result of budget action, we've met and had meetings, called meetings, for the Judicial Council, separate from our regularly scheduled meetings. So if it comes back that we can act more quickly on the final report, we can certainly call that meeting and have everyone attend, either by phone or video or otherwise. Judge Rosenberg?
Thank you, Chief. I will follow up on that.
One quick question and then a quick comment. The question is, the California Department of Technology, I guess that's what they're calling these days.
Caltech is what they're calling themselves.
Caltech.
I think there's an intellectual property issue there.
What has been their position or input on this draft?
Very enthusiastic. Not on this particular draft, but in a work in progress, a draft that we presented to them back in
October.
Back in October. And checked in with them a couple of times since. So
I'm very glad to hear that.
So we're very enthusiastic, and there's nothing in this progressive draft that's at odds with anything that was in the previous draft.
Well, they're the experts, so it's good to have them aboard and supportive. Certainly support getting this draft out as soon as possible, even well before the comment period even begins. No harm in doing that. But I certainly would caution cutting the comment period in any way. This is significant enough that we want to make sure that everyone gets a chance to comment.
And I think it fits what we were talking about earlier in relation to the budget discussions, that, you know, to some degree, if we make progress, create, quote-unquote, efficiencies and so forth and so on, we need to trump up our process. I mean, on the progress, particularly in regards to, like, the B article that again, redresses backwards to our prior history rather than where we are now in terms of going forward. So.
Thank you. Judge D'Alba.
Chief, I just want to make a comment. There was a lot of discussion by the council and various members earlier today about best practices and efficiencies in the branch. Judge Rosenberg and I believe Judge Walsh mentioned laboratories where best practices and efficiencies can be fostered. In my opinion, this plan is going to create a fertile ground for 58 laboratories to further IT efficiencies and best practices.
and help us as a branch solve some of those issues that we conceptually were trying to achieve maybe a decade or 5 years ago that relate to interoperability, document management, IT issues, e-filing, connectivity, some of the standards and challenges that we've been facing. So Mark Desmond has done a fabulous job, Mr. Ouyang, and of course, as everybody already knows, Judge Herman and Justice Ashwinder. So thank you, Chief.
Thank you. All in favor of approving the conceptual draft plan, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. It's approved. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
Justice Baxter has kindly pointed out that we have Presiding Judge Conklin from Fresno in the audience, and I'd like to invite Presiding Judge Conklin to the podium to say a few words. We've talked about your court quite a bit today.
Thank you very much, Chief. I appreciate the opportunity. By way of full disclosure, I've been presiding judge for 23 days.
Congratulations. So,
the projects and the accomplishments of our court are clearly not under my watch. I have Sharon Morton with me. Brian Cotta's name has been mentioned numerous times, and it's through their efforts that we've achieved, I think, many of the goals that you've talked about today. And one of those examples is our remote video process that we've used was necessitated by our budget crisis and the closure of many of our outlying courts. Through the innovation of Ms. Morton and Brian and others, they developed a video remote proceeding where we're able to put video locations in the other courts that were closed, for instance, the court in Coalinga, which was 90 miles away from our main court, and allowed, in this case, traffic proceedings to occur, thereby working with those local jurisdictions, addressing their concerns about the cost of having officers come in, witnesses come into the court, eliminating those costs and simply producing at the costs, instead of tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of dollars, of a video proceeding that allows that exactly to occur. We've now applied that to remote video interpreting, and we're hoping, though we recognize it's somewhat of a, there are other issues related to it, that through the use of remote video interpreting, where we can have interpreters appear throughout the state in our court, and we've actually accomplished this. We have set this up, and we've used it in a hearing, in a preliminary hearing, where we had an interpreter appear from San Diego, a hearing that would have had to have been delayed days, if not weeks, that would have required thousands of dollars for that interpreter to come to Fresno, to appear through nothing more than a video cart that Brian put together at a cost of about $500, and allowed the interpreter to appear in the court. It was set up in such a way that everybody's interests were addressed. The defense was very concerned, for instance, that there would be lack of confidential communication. We accomplished that through nothing more than unplugging the cord. So when the attorney wanted to speak to their client, everybody showed that they've unplugged their earphones. They took them off. The defense attorney was very comfortable in talking with her client in accomplishing what turned out to be a resolution of the hearing without the necessity of a full-blown preliminary hearing. It allowed for absolute communication, and while we recognize that it might not have been as effective as a live body in the courtroom, it surely was effective. I mean, it surely accomplished the goals of access to justice that I've heard emphasized time and time and time here today. So I appreciate the opportunity to speak. I wish I could claim credit for the ideas, but it's only through the innovation of those folks with boots on the ground that made it work. So thank you.
Thank you, Presiding Judge Conklin. We appreciate your coming and speaking to us, and we would like to follow up on what else is happening in Fresno to find out the detail of how that worked.
We look forward
thank
to that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
And thank you. Judge Herman.
I'd just like to emphasize that in speaking with legislators yesterday, we, as part of the Chief's Access 3D, the second plank of which is remote access, that in discussing legislators, we discussed this project, and they were all extremely enthused about the project. So, Fresno, well done. Thank you.
This concludes our January business meeting. As you know, our next regularly scheduled business meeting is February 20th, once again here in Sacramento. We close our meetings, as we unfortunately often do, in memory of judicial officers who have passed on. And we report today Judge Thomas Kane, deceased January 2014 out of San Mateo Court, Santa Clara Court. And we thank him for his honor and service to the people of California. Also, before we adjourn, two matters. Cynthia, pardon? Ravens, out of Los Angeles Superior Court. Was she retired? We adjourn in her honor, Cynthia Ravis, out of Los Angeles.
Your Honor, there's also a Judge Robert Carey from San Mateo County who passed away last November, I think, December 1892, survived by his wife of 61 years, Helen.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bonino.
And I might add a legendary judge, a trial judge, there's no Frank Creed, who served for many, many years.
Thank you, Justice Belster.
And if I could just, I'm sorry, Jim Curry just retired a couple of years ago out of Newport County.
I'm sorry to hear all of this news. We know many of these judges ourselves personally, having worked with them, and we honor them for their work and close this meeting in their memory. There is lunch served also. Justice Miller asked me to remind you that there's a meeting of E&P and RuPro at the close of our meeting today. Thank you all.